So I think rugby definitely allowed me to find myself probably in a deeper way than most, but exploring my sexuality and coming out openly gay probably around the age of 20, but you know, I was probably gay when I was about 16, if we're totally honest about it. You're listening to the England Rugby Podcast, O2 Inside Line. I'm Megan Jones. I'm Megan Jones and I play for Leicester Tigers and the Red Roses. I play outside centre, so number 13, one of the hardest jobs in defence. You've got to be quite patient, but from an attack point of view, probably got the most space to be decisive, communicate to the inside backs, to get the ball wide as well. So a lot of vision is needed. Being patient with your running lines, being patient with your defensive reads, but also as well when you've got your opportunity to take it, being decisive is obviously a key characteristic as well. So I was born and raised in Cardiff, as you can probably tell by the accent. I was brought up in a house where my mum worked night shifts her whole life. She's a nurse, so she worked extremely hard. My dad was a plumber and yeah, he was self-employed for majority of our time growing up. So we spent a lot more time with him because my mum was resting or either getting up and having to, you know, take us to tennis or after school clubs or what have you. So yeah, she worked extremely hard. And I was, yeah, with my brother and sister, Sam and Abby. Brother's the oldest, Abby's the middle child and I'm the youngest. We were all very different growing up, different personality traits. I'm a bit of an extrovert. I'm always out there, put myself out there. My sister's more of an introvert, but when you get her on a good day, she's funny, she's bubbly, and you know, she's the life and soul of a party. And my brother is definitely way more timid. But again, hardworking, all very different in our own respects. We just built a family based on enjoyment, laughter, and not taking ourselves too seriously, but also with the idea of things aren't always going to go your way. But if you work hard enough and you put the effort in, you know, you're going to get something out. Yeah, so in Cardiff, neighbourhood around me, you know, I had friends close by. It's quite a busy city. You know, you're not too far away from everything. It's got lots going on. I used to always be at the park playing football. I was surrounded a lot by boys growing up. Not too sure why. I think I was just more drawn to male or boyfriends. Rugby was always a huge part growing up, particularly being in Wales. Very proud rugby players. It is a national sport. But I remember one day my brother went to play down at Glamorgan Wanderers, which was my first club, down in Ely. And I got jealous and I said to my dad, look, I want to play. Can I go and play? And it's funny that a six-year-old would just, you know, jump out and say, let me play. But I was always, I had a ball in my hand. My mum and dad always used to say, you just wanted to play catch all the time and throw the ball around. So there's obviously some innate thing inside of me that wanted me to be in a ball sport. So yeah, my brother went down and I said, look, I want to go. And my dad said, no way are you going down, not my little girl. She's not going to play rugby. And my mum, very like hardworking woman, she's very strong on, you know, if you want to do something, go and do it. So yeah, eventually she convinced my dad and yeah, I went down. I had no concept of what the game was. All I knew was that I had lots of energy. I could bring what I wanted to the game and immediately I was respected. I won player of the training session that day and the kind of rest of it fell into place. I should probably disclaimer and say that I had short hair at the time. So they probably thought I was a boy as well. So I had nits, obviously, growing up, as most kids do. And it came to the point where my dad was like, right, I'm fed up of spending all this money. He's a Welsh man. He's tight. He's not going to spend his money. He was like, right, get on the chair. He came back after Friday night, had a few Swifties down the bar. And he said, get on the chair. And I was like, what? He's like, let's cut your hair off. And I was like, all right, let's do it. Chopped all my hair off, kitchen scissors first. I had these nice blonde ringlets, like perfect little girl. And my mum's on a night shift, obviously. And he's cut it all up, shaved off, number one, no shape up at all. Anyway, that was Friday night. Mum comes home Saturday morning, bursts into tears. What have you done? Crazy, on the phone to my gran as well. Monday morning, school photo. So it was all a bit wild. But to be honest, I look back at those times and that was the time where, that's when it gave me a bit of thick skin. You know, I was getting called a boy a lot. Into my latter stages of my you know, school life, I was getting called a man, lesbian. And ultimately, I think it made me into the person I am today. When I went to Glamorgan Wanderers, it's from a low socio-economical background. A lot of those boys that went used it to escape from the surrounding area. And I experienced that with those boys. So my dad would have to drop them off home, pick them up. And it was very community driven. You'd have loads of people going out of their way to make sure these kids were coming to play some rugby and be part of a community. And it was the hub of the community in Ely. Growing up, playing at Glamorgan Wanderers, I experienced how important it was to help others. And not necessarily always being there and asking if people are okay, but, you know, if someone's not turning up and they're 20% or they're 60%, how can you facilitate their 40%? And that might be by providing them energy, that might be doing a small act of kindness, but that also as well might just be giving them a little tap on the back and saying, oh, it's good to have you in the team. I found that really important, and I found as well the impact of that. So as a low socioeconomic area in Glamorgan Wanderers, we punched well above our weight against other teams that had sustainable income, had rich families that they could lean back on. Definitely held with me, and something I try and bring into clubs now. So I'm at Leicester Tigers. We're new kids on the block. We haven't necessarily got everything, but, you know, myself and Amy Cocaine, the girls wanted some carb gels. We didn't have enough money or budget to facilitate that. So I bought some caffeine gum and we got ourselves some energy gels. And I'm talking, this is such a small thing to do, but it shows people that you care about what you're doing, and it doesn't have to be a big act or, you know, a big shout about it moment. It just has to be something to show people that you're really invested in this and you'll do the little nuances in order for the team to achieve. You build respect as well amongst the group, which is very important. So I was playing rugby in Wales up until the age of, I was about 16, but I made this decision that I was going to jump over the bridge. And I was going to go to Hartbury College at the age of 16. I remember my daddy, he sat me down and he said, look, and this is a proud Welshman, by the way, saying this. He said, look, if you're serious about this rugby and you want to progress it further, you have to do everything you possibly can to put yourself in the best position. I made that decision from a young age and I jumped over to Hartbury College, which was essentially a hub of young English players that wanted to progress through the pathway, have a professional outlook on playing rugby alongside academia and essentially be a future Red Rose. So I jumped through all the hoops. I went to Hartbury College. I played for Gloucestershire County, played for Southwest Division. And then I got my first call up at the age of 17 to play for England Sevens out in Brieve, which is on Father's Day, which is a really special moment because my dad came to watch as well. Everything just kind of fell into place after that, really. And I just kind of ran with it, really. Just grabbed it with both hands and said, this is my opportunity. This is my journey. I fully belong here. I am enough. And, you know, my mum being from Bristol allowed me to do that.
My name is Nolly Waterman, and I had the pleasure of coaching Meg at Hartbury College when she was a 16-year-old whippersnapper. And I was also her teammate at Bristol and England Sevens and England Fifteens. So the first time I met Meg, she was actually running around in a little scrum cap, the pink shirt, playing for Cardiff Quins. And I was like, who is that girl? She is incredible. And I would say she's probably the most naturally gifted player at that age that I ever saw. Meg was great fun to coach, just incredibly competitive. Right from that early age, you could see that she understood how to get better and wanted to. I don't think many people truly understand how many significant injuries Megan has already overcome at such a young age. I coached many talented players and I never quite understood why some of them didn't quite make the next step. And I think that's the psychology side of it. That's the mental side of elite sport. And Meg had it in abundance. And I think the fact that she came back through all of those injuries epitomizes just how talented she actually is. To see how well she's doing at Leicester, how much of a like teammate she is, I think, yeah, it's just really cool to have played a small part in that journey. She's obviously lit up the stage in Sevens massively, and I'm sure we'll do that this summer in Paris and then come back and be performing in England 2025, no doubt.
So growing up in Wales, obviously everyone's really proud to be Welsh. And it's weird, you might not get it, you might not understand, but when you see a Welsh person and you just instantly click, you might not even know their name, but you get a bit Welshier, you start bouncing off each other. I don't know, there's some hidden book out there that's just said that we're going to bond regardless of where we are in the world, who you are, but there's going to be a mutual bond there. So there's definitely that part inside of me, that proudness. Yes, I'm proud to be Welsh. Yes, I play for England. But regardless of the shirt I wear, I'll always be proud of my journey and where I've come from. Growing up, I mean, you know, we've all got values within our families, within the friends we build and the bonds we create. Mine was very simple. It was input v output. My dad said to me, whatever you want to chase, you go after it. And if you want it enough, you'll get something out of it, whether that's a lesson learned or, you know, that's an achievement. I obviously speak fluent Welsh as well, so I went to fluent Welsh school from the age of 3 up until the age of 16. That's very important to me as well. I tried to suppress my Welsh side quite a bit coming over to England, subconsciously, just because, you know, you want to fit in and you want to be part and obviously not ruffle too many feathers. I've learned to embrace it more because it is a full part of me and it is who I am. And I think it's really important that we celebrate each other's cultures, different backgrounds and where we've come from. Right, let me give you a little bit of background about my dad, okay? So I bought him a England Roses top. I got it from me. He touched it. That's quality, that is. That's good quality, that. Next time I come home, he's unstitched the badge off. And I said, Dad, what have you done? He said, what, you expect me to go down the pub with that on? And I was like, you are joking me. So he's unstitched the badge off. He still wears it now. That cracked me up. And it just shows, like, he wants to support, but he also wants to do it discreetly. So, yeah, look, he's my number one fan. He always will be. You know, he's my best friend as well. He's always said to me, you know, you got to do what's best for you. And he's supported that massively. Without him, it would be really difficult to have the perspective that I have now. Getting my first cap, I was at a Southwest Divisional Sevens competition, and Simon Middleton, he was the coach at the time. He took me with my dad and he said, look, do you want to come on tour with us? Next thing I know, I'm getting a bag full of kit, some hand-me-downs. I remember Katie Daly McLean's initials were on there. And next thing I know, I'm on the plane to France. I just remember getting stuck out there, making a lot of mistakes. And looking back now, you know, when you see young players making mistakes and being hard on themselves, I'm like, listen, we have all been there. That was really important. And it was just amazing for him to be there. Playing sevens, both sevens and 15s, has allowed me to, you know, be on the world stage and play the pinnacle of both sports, being the Olympic Games or also being over in Ireland in 2017. These are top end of your career. These are the things that you dream of going to. But ultimately, they're just games of rugby. And I think the bit that differentiates between your club games or your games that are a higher regard, let's say, is the noise around it. You know, you're part of something bigger than maybe just the game or the sport you're playing. And that's kind of through my experiences that I've kind of noticed, is that ultimately it's such amazing buzz. But if you play the game like it's your first training session, the way you play will be far greater. So that's something I've learned through my years. Of course, it's an amazing achievement. And when you're in it, you probably don't give yourself enough credit. And it probably won't be until 20, 30 years after I've stopped playing that I'll finally go, well, that was pretty cool, you know.
Over a Lev Kelter's record, who's playing in England. But Jones has us on the outside. Ben Jones, the magician Meg. Look at her go. And that is a stunning response from England.
Wow, what an individual response there. Fantastic solo try.
I'm Zoe Alcroft and I play for Gloucester, Hartbury and England. I would describe Meg Jones off the pitch, an absolute character. She is hilarious. She just brings so much energy to everything that she does. On the pitch as well, she's just an incredible rugby player. She gives 120% every single time.
I'm Maud Muir. I play for Gloucester, Hartbury and England Rugby.
Meg Jones is a magical player. She creates something out of nothing. She can make a team come together so well. She creates bonds that no one else can see, and I just love it. I love her.
So Meg Jones kicks it ahead. Jones, clever play from Meg Jones. How will this one sit up? Tantalisingly close to line. Oh, it's still there. Have we got a fabulous score here in Spain?
Going into Tokyo Olympic Games, we were underdogs. We had 5 months to prep as Team GB. And for us to come out on top, you know, we beat USA in our quarterfinal. And I can't tell you the euphoria that we felt. You know, we had this sense of belief that we were going to go win this. And we genuinely believed it as a group. We hadn't won a medal at this point. So I got so far ahead of myself that what we'd achieved, I thought was enough. So that was my biggest learning, was I let the occasion get the better of me there. And I didn't sleep that whole night. I just kept thinking, I'm going to be a national hero when I wake up. If I beat France in this semi-final, we're going to be the first Team GB rugby sevens team to ever have a medal. women's. I think that occasion and that outcome of looking too far ahead got the better of us as a group, but also the better of me as well. We never really debriefed as a group Olympics. It actually, I think, probably I carried a lot of burden on us until the following year. Then we finally said, right, we need to iron some things out. Our value does not decrease based on one small experience that we encountered together. If anything, it made us stronger as a group. You know, it made us hungrier to want to achieve more. The role I play off the pitch in Red Rose is just me, really. It's no script, it's just who I am. That's through experience and really owning who I was. There's an accumulation of things, you know, being openly gay, being comfortable with my partner, being comfortable with myself and who I am and what I bring to the table. And also as well, that sense of like nobody's bigger than the game. I just want to be who I am unforgivingly and not put a filter on it. I remember getting pulled in before Tokyo and it was with Abby Brown because Abby Brown was the captain at the time as well. So yeah, I got called and they said, look, we're going to both kind of have you as co-captains of the group. And to be honest, to me, it was just an armband. It was just more of I was just given almost a here's your armband, you can wear this now and people will know you're captain. I was still delivering the same messages and leading the same way without the armband. Abby would fall on me as a support network to bounce ideas off and get a sense check of the group as well. But ultimately what I was doing and you know who I was being was still the same leader. So I always consider myself as a leader with high standards. But I also know that you do need to switch off and you can act and perform ultimately on the pitch. So that's how we kind of worked, me and Abby. She had a high level of empathy and understanding of others. And I had a big drive and focus on, we get this right, we have the fundamentals right, then we will execute in high pressured situations. So we balance ourselves out perfectly. I think we're all leaders in our own right. And I think this is what people forget sometimes is that you actually lead yourself every day. So you always hold yourself accountable for the things you do, the actions that you do. No one else dictates that. And I think that's really important because once you do that and you lead yourself well and you do it from a place of trueness, then it also then falls onto other people and they start going, oh, okay, I'm going to follow you then. So I've always had that growing up, even in small groups in school. I remember always being the vocal leader. Like, I didn't have a fear of getting something wrong or doing something wrong. And I would just, if I got it wrong, I would just go, okay, well, we'll try again then. So I think rugby definitely allowed me to find myself probably in a deeper way than most, but exploring my sexuality and coming out openly gay, probably around the age of 20, but, you know, I was probably gay when I was about 16, if we're totally honest about it. And me and Celia, obviously, we've got this platform of sharing our relationship, probably more than others. But that only came about because someone was interested in our story and they wanted to share that. We didn't think anything of it. You know, we wanted to always stay true to ourselves. And we thought, okay, well, look, let's share it, see what happens. It could just help one person, if that. On reflection, when we did it and the response that we got from it was so positive, particularly from the rugby community, just showed how important it was to speak about it. And I think that's why now I'll always make a conscious effort of introducing Celia, making sure that people know that she's my partner, and also just making the situation comfortable, because I think some people just don't know and they don't want to get it wrong, which I understand, you know. I'll get things wrong as well in other areas. And I think the more you speak about it, the more you can make those mistakes and just understand about being gay and being a lesbian or being part of the LGBTQ+ community. Most of the positive response was just like, thank you so much for sharing your story. I've recently come out gay myself and it's just allowed me to, you know, see, I guess, these role models, you know, voicing their relationships as well and just, you know, just showing people that it's very normal, like as simple as that, really. We had a couple of question marks as well around like, why do we need to shout about this? And I'm like, oh, I'm not shouting about it. I'm just sharing it. No different to if I was in a heterosexual couple. Once you speak about it once, people get a little bit interested and they want to understand it more on a deeper level, which I think is really important. So when you look at, obviously, women's rugby, there's a lot more openly gay lesbians within the game as opposed to your men's. I think the biggest thing is probably the level of banter that probably boys get. And I think as well, like, there's probably a negative connotation on being gay. You know, language when you're growing up, oh, that's so gay, or, you know, oh, that's really gay. And it's such a negative effect on that. and the language you use has a repercussion on how people feel about being gay. So that's probably one point, the language that we use. Second one is that masculinity is probably celebrated more within society than femininity. I think it's slowly changing. That's a hurdle we keep trying to jump over. And there's also that, you know, that macho mentality of having a family, being the provider, being the core rock of your family. And there's a lot of pressure on that, you know. It's like, I do feel for boys because, I mean, imagine having to hide the fact that you can't come out as gay. I just think it's sad and it must be such a burden on your shoulders. I met Celia through rugby. She was at Loughborough, but she'd only just started playing rugby. I didn't really know her. And we hadn't, you know, there was no instant love at first sight connection. And then progressed, obviously flirtatious and etc. So one date after another, and yeah, nearly 5 years down the line now. So yeah, she's probably going to ask for a ring soon, but not sure. She keeps sending me hints on Instagram and TikTok. So yeah, fingers crossed I don't get it wrong. She's a player at Wasps with me. We were also then, we're obviously at Tigers, and then we went on to Team GB together as well, where we competed at Tokyo Olympic Games. She's a big, powerful winger, and yeah, definitely has that competitive edge with her size that I think puts her above other players. Her relentlessness to not give up, I think that's what brought her into the team as well. So obviously playing with Celia, I'm definitely the dictator on the pitch, so I'm quite bossy, and there's definitely been times where I've probably overstepped the mark with C, but she will let me know. She'll always check on me and see if I'm in a good headspace as well to make those decisions. It's really good to have, I guess, that network on the pitch. We always had a strong relationship anyway, and it was built on similar values from family and friends, which are now really interlinked closely. Our families bond really well, and I never thought I'd have that with my partner.
I'm Celia Ponsa, and I'm Meg's partner. So Meg and I, obviously, we met in the programme, and then we've been in playing sevens together for a couple of years. My first impression of Meg was that she was just probably a confident individual. She seemed to just be able to work the room and seem popular, like, amongst the group. Yeah, we got on, like, straight away, really. She's a bundle of energy. She's, like, constantly just, like, buzzing. And I'm, like, a lot more chilled, relaxed. But we have really similar, like, values and morals. And we also just enjoyed the same thing. So we found ourselves, like, in social situations together and just, like, bouncing off each other. And then I think, like, just over time, we were just a bit like, okay, like, could this, like, be any more? And she's just like a flirty individual anyway. So she actually wrote 079 me on my hand. And she claims that that wasn't her making moves. But yeah, anyway. And that was how it kind of started. And from then, I was just like, oh, okay, maybe I could see something with Meg. Playing with Meg is just, it is amazing. And like, we have such a good relationship off the pitch that does translate on the pitch. It really works, and I think, like, we just enjoy being able to share those moments together. But I am just so proud of her. She's honestly, like, my favourite person on this earth. She's just such a bundle of energy. She's so caring, but also just funny. Like, she just makes me laugh so much. I'm so proud of, obviously, all her rugby achievements, and I know she's going to keep achieving more and more over the next few years. I just feel like she's just such a good person. Everyone deserves to have someone like Meg in their life.
Rugby's allowed me to express myself and I think find myself on a deeper level. I think it's allowed me to do that because of the different personalities and characters you have within the game, because of the connection we had on the pitch through adversity or through wins, you know, through championing each other. That's how rugby's allowed me to actually celebrate my differences as well, because I've learned to celebrate others' differences. Probably being a male-dominated sport as well, we've had to kind of fight the fight quite a lot. We have to be different in that respect. We can't just follow suit of what the men are doing, because we're also trying to create a product that is our own and is not necessarily going to be the same way as the men. So we had to show that as well. We celebrate what we have within the group. The games allow me to believe in what I have is a huge impact on others, and it's enough and it is good enough to bring to the table.